You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Basketball has officially entered the second half of the season. This is the time for teams to prove if they are contenders or pretenders. And DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy sports, is giving new players a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes. Get in on the action now to claim your free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes when using code THPN during signup.
Playing daily fantasy basketball is simple. You just pick your lineup, stay under the salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. Although, you know, staying under the salary cap, not so easy. It's, you know, just ask Jason Botrel. Feel the sweat like never before. Every dunk, steal, assist means so much more when you have a DraftKings daily fantasy lineup.
Who do you think is going to make a late season push this year in the NBA?
You know what? The Heat, they're already making it. They're already making a push because they were like in like 13th a little while ago. Obviously, it was the finals last year. I think there's a non-zero chance they actually end up with the best record in the East.
Nice.
We'll see. We'll see. Anyway, so with DraftKings, a payday comes every day for players. So what are you waiting for? Head to the app now.
Download the DraftKings app now and use promo code THPN during signup. This week, DraftKings is putting you in the action with a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes. That's code THPN, and you can get a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Straight Up Sabres, presented by the Hockey Podcast Network and Buffalo Fanatics. As always, I'm Brendan.
And I'm Taylor.
And we are recording this episode before the Sabres are set to take on the Pittsburgh Penguins. So at this point, we decided to do this because in reality, no matter what the outcome of tonight's game is, it really doesn't change much. But we do want to talk about the biggest change that has happened with the Sabres over the past week. Don Granato. So he is now the head coach of the team on an interim basis, of course, while the front office is beginning to conduct a head coaching search. I got to say, even though the on-ice results have maybe not reflected as we're still in the midst of this losing streak, we'll see if that remains true tomorrow. I will give Granato credit for his honesty and transparency in answering a lot of the questions that have been thrown at him.
Treating Jeff Skinner like a human.
Yeah, right. So let's just get right into that. So he's made a couple of, I guess it's kind of funny to say, but like in reality, it's like kind of eye-opening statements, but he's just being honest. And the reason why that's so foreign to us is because Ralph Krueger would get asked what's 2 + 2. And then he'd go on a 2-minute rant about why it's 4 and if it really is 4, and maybe it is, but maybe it isn't. And so you never really got straight answers out of him when you wanted that. But Granato has been like brutally honest in a good way. And the thing that I've kind of found interesting about it is that on the one hand, when he talks about the team under Ralph Krueger, it's not even like he's taking pot shots or anything like that, but just the honesty in his answers in reality are like inadvertent shots at Krueger. Did you kind of get the sense of that as well? Like just in the way that he's talking about how the team was so anxious and you know, like how they were getting in their own heads a bit. The way he's talking about Jeff Skinner with that particular quote being my first conversation with Jeff, I felt an obligation to get him excited about playing, about scoring, about impacting outcome. And I told him I was going to work on that from my side. Obviously, the coaching position itself, you hold a lot of leverage in that regard in what you present to players, what you present to the team in focus points. We clearly, everybody knew we needed scoring, and he's a guy that we believe can score. Ralph has not said anything even close to resembling that pretty much over the past 2 years.
Yeah, and I think in some ways his lineup decisions have kind of made more sense. Like, it seemed like if the Saturday game wasn't canceled, that Cody Eakin was going to be out. I don't know if they've said anything today, but I don't think there's any decisions yet on today's lineup. But
yeah, they've been keeping mum.
As we talk, it'll probably come out. But yeah, Eakin should probably sit at least one game. And
or the rest of them.
Yeah, he probably should be bought out. But anyway, yeah, I think I liked what I've seen so far. Early returns, I guess, are decent. Because at this point, it seems so like ridiculous and naive to say you can't judge it by wins and losses. And eventually I'd like at least one of those wins.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
But the way things currently stand is untenable. Like,
yeah,
Jake McCabe is out for the year. We're not seeing him again. While he was playing, was frankly the Sabres' best defenseman. Borgen, while he was playing in that limited time, he looked like one of the better defensemen, at least playing in his own zone too.
Mm-hmm.
Ristolainen seems like either he's missing McCabe or he's really still dealing with COVID, and probably both. Eichel's out. The goaltenders are pretty much all gone. I know Ullmark has been practicing again.
He could be back this weekend.
So he could be back this weekend. Unfortunately, Carter Hutton does not seem like he's going to be back anytime soon. He took a pretty nasty spill, and he's going home, quote unquote. I don't know where home is for him, to get that checked out. So that seems like it's going to be some time that he's going to be out. And Jonas Johansson will not be able to step in because he's been traded.
Amazingly.
Another franchise, and maybe probably the first or second or third most talented team in the NHL, decided they wanted Jonas Johansson's help, who some have described as the worst goalie they've ever seen in 20 years covering the Sabres.
I believe John Vogel was the one who used that.
Larson, Bob Asenza, Justin Thibault. And Anders Lindbach.
Michael Telkvist. I mean,
oh, how dare you put him with those guys? Good Lord.
I'm a Telkvist stan. Come on now.
He was good. He played like 5 games.
He did.
He went to Europe.
He did.
But anyway, goaltending is a huge problem. We're going to be Dustin Tokarski.
Yes.
Just got a new game for the first time in 4.5 years.
Didn't look too bad. I will say that. I mean, yeah, for not fine. Playing in 4.5 years, he was handsome. That's what I mean. He was like fine as a bar that Sabres goalies have had trouble reaching this season, with the exception of Ullmark.
Yeah, Ullmark. So if Ullmark's back, he intermittently looks pretty good,
mm-hmm.
or really bad, which makes him by far the best goalie.
Yeah.
since what, like Leonard's like 2016 season? I mean, it's been a while since we've had a goalie that looked better than occasionally good. But yeah, I don't have too much more to say. We've talked about these guys a lot, so I'm interested to see what Granato does over the second half of the season.
Yeah, the thing that kind of sucks too is that what's really hard at this point for us to, at least from like an analyzing standpoint, is that the sample size is just so small, and we only have 20 some odd games left in the season, and so it's going to be limited, I guess, in the evaluating that we can do, just because, you know, we aren't really going to know. But at least on the bright side, though, in that 20 games, I'm really going to be looking to see specifically how Rasmus Dahlin is going to be looking, and if Granato is going to take the reins off. Because Kruger, I mean, as of even like within the past month, was kind of asked about that. And again, without giving a direct answer, pretty much said no, that they weren't letting Dahlin do his thing, you know, and by the thing, I mean, the thing that made him a first overall pick and that made him, you know, one of the top 18-year-old defensemen in the history of the NHL.
Yeah.
AKA just like letting him play his offensive game and not putting so much just defensive responsibility on him. So, I mean, we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Well, with giving him that defensive responsibility or making him play more limited, the thought was at least he would have a good defensive game. And critics of that were like, okay, even though he'll get better in his own zone, he won't be as effective because, you know, his real skills on offense and he'll be holding that back. That didn't happen. He looks way worse in his own zone. And I think his confidence is destroyed.
I do too.
And I think that's something that has to be rebuilt by Granato or whoever the next coach is. But the one thing I'd say like is try getting him going offensively.
Mm-hmm.
Confidence might come from there. I mean, guys, you know, he'll know when he's getting beat on, you know, in his own zone. He'll know when he's not playing well enough in his own zone.
Right.
But if he's putting up, let's say over the last 28 games, if he puts up 5 goals and 15 assists or like 20 assists, even maybe,
mm-hmm.
Maybe he feels better. He won't put up 20 assists.
No,
like
he won't.
There's no one to pass to.
Well, and I will say something that I wanted to actually bring up to kind of get your thoughts on. So a friend of the Straight Up Sabres, Kevin NT Ryder 825, he's brought up a pretty interesting point that I think a lot of us are maybe overlooking a little bit. And I don't know if it's maybe premature or it's just like a harsh reality that we're going to have to face, but defensemen, of course, take longer to develop. There's no disputing that. That's just like a historical trend in the league, especially in modern NHL as well, for them to really kind of hit their peak. I mean, if we're being honest, like Aaron Ekblad was a first overall pick, and probably just this season, he's having his best season of his career at this point.
Yeah.
Hedman is another example, too, of a guy like that. But what Kevin had brought up that it's kind of shitty, but the fact of the matter is that we took Rasmus Dahlin first overall with the expectation that he was going to be a generational two-way defenseman. And obviously, you know, his offense and his offensive instincts, raw natural talent, are what made him the phenomenon that he was when he was, you know, coming out of Frölunda and leading up into his draft year. But if you're drafting a defenseman first overall, you need to be drafting them because you think they're a shutdown all-purpose defenseman. And it's probably worth really asking ourselves if that's what Dahlin is doing, because people were saying to him, the way that it kind of came up, were people bringing up the point that we're saying right now, which is, I think, a reasonable point. I think there's time for both of these points, but, you know, that Kruger, like, making him play a more like defensively responsible game was taking away from his offense, and they need to like not put all that responsibility on him. But Kevin's point, if I'm understanding correctly, I don't know if you've heard him say this, but like at that point, not that you should have just drafted Svechnikov, but like if you're taking a defenseman first overall, it's because you think that they can be an all-around two-way.
Yeah, and everyone did.
Yeah.
Everyone in the world did. There was no one in the world that said the draft Svechnikov.
Right.
That was one of the most slam dunk ones of all time, even more so than McDavid, because nobody looked at Svechnikov like Eichel.
Right. Right. And I don't say that. And I want to say, too, I think this is getting across anyways, but like, I'm not bringing this up to question, be like, oh, we should have drafted Svechnikov. That's not it at all. But we're getting into a territory now where we have to really start asking, because of the fact that his contract is up at the end of this season, is he that guy? Can he be that guy? If not, are you going to pay him a boatload of money, like, because you think he is? I mean, I've said this before, and I think we're probably in agreement. I don't really know at this point where he's going to come in for his AAV when they, and even his term too. I mean, it's tough because it's like, I don't really want to give him a bridge deal, but I don't really want to give him a bunch of term either.
It's safer to give him a bridge deal.
It is safer. No, it is, but I just don't want to. It's different, I guess, but we've run into situations with this team, mainly just like Sam Reinhart, where these bridge deals kill you.
Yeah, well, you know, when Sam got his bridge deal, he was coming off being a point-a-game player for the second half of the season, and if anyone who isn't like an Easter Island head dumbass would be able to notice.
Yeah, yeah. I know, but I mean, I do think that a bridge is ultimately where we're going to end up, yes. But I don't know. I mean, I just increasingly more and more, and again, like I'm hoping that my mind will be changed by the end of this season. But if it comes down to it, like, I guess if you would have told me before this season about the prospect of potentially trading him, I would have been like, you're absolutely out of your mind. There's no way in hell we should do that. But the more and more that he just does not look like he has it together, the more and more I'm softening on that stance. It's essentially the point that I'm trying to get to with all of this.
Yeah.
Where are you at on that front?
Oof, he looks terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Paulie meme, seeing Tony Soprano in the hospital. So he's not scoring. I know he has had bad luck with his on-ice shooting percentage when he's out there, so not a lot of goals and assists, but like, he's not really carrying offensive play.
No.
And I know he was being held back by a dumb system and a bad coach, but I think a guy of his talent should be able to break through more, where you're like,
that's what I'm getting at.
You know, yeah. Who else was held back by a stupid coach? Jack Eichel. He's had nothing but stupid coaches. And when, even though he wasn't immediately a great 200-foot player, he could impact play right away.
Take over.
Mostly on the offensive end, obviously. But every once in a while, every few games, really, be like, oh, wow, look at that. Mm-hmm. And you don't really get that as much with Dallane. And maybe there's something that has to, some kind of, I don't know, important sit down that has to happen in the offseason. Maybe he's like a lot of, you know, guys that don't pan out. Maybe he's not putting in the effort on his own end. Maybe it's a confidence thing.
It could be.
Maybe he needs to be used differently.
Well,
but that's the number one thing they have to figure out.
And I think the other thing with him too, that in the craziness of this year that gets overlooked is like, yeah, they didn't make any updates to the defense, which is like bad as it is. But more importantly, he doesn't have a partner. Like I love the idea of like a long-term set up with him and Borgen being a pair. And we'll see, of course, you know, once the offseason comes around, what moves they end up making. But he's in his third season now, and they haven't had like a good defensive partner for him. And to me, if you're drafting a defenseman first overall, you need to go out of your way to insulate him and like acclimate him as well as you possibly can.
Yeah.
As well as you possibly can.
Majorly screwed that up.
And an easy way to do that is getting him a capable defensive partner that takes some of the responsibility off of him. And they just haven't done that at all.
It's legitimately insane. So like one example you brought up is the other defenseman recently that was taken first overall is Ekblad. Who'd Ekblad play with in his rookie year? Brian Campbell.
Yeah. You're
Brian
right.
Brian Campbell.
Yep.
And it should be noted that when Campbell retired after that or went to the Blackhawks. I'm forgetting what order this happened in. But anyway, he was gone after Ekblad's rookie year. And Ekblad, you know, took a dive from there. And then he's gotten better since. But, like, it was clear that Campbell was hugely important. Who did Tyler Myers play his rookie year with?
Henrik Tillander.
That's right.
Yep.
They need a Henrik Tillander type.
But, like, better.
Yeah. Well, like, not even necessarily that much better. Like, just – they don't have they somehow just go year after year and they don't have an average defenseman. Maybe someone that played like McCabe played like this year. But you know what? McCabe didn't play like this last year. McCabe has not consistently played like this. Colin Miller, when he got traded here, he's been pretty inconsistent as well. And those are some of the nicer things you could say. Scandella was good his, what, third year here?
Something
he was
like fine, that, yeah.
And he was traded for far too little. Well, what are you looking
the
at
first
besides
time.
That? Huh. Nathan Boyeux?
I know. Failure. Brandon Montour,
failure.
Yep.
Like, I mean, and not to put too fine a point on it, but every player you bring in sucks.
Yeah. Like, no, it's the truth.
So, like, I guess that speaks to a larger problem than what's happened to Dallene, but man.
Yeah, it's bad. And that's the thing is, like I said, before this season, I never would have even entertained the idea of trading him because even though last season it kind of felt like he didn't take the step forward that we wanted out of him, it was still like, all right, again, you have one of the best 18-year-old seasons, not even among defensemen. Just like even if you want to compare it across the board, even forwards, goalie, whatever, like one of the best 18-year-old rookie seasons that we have seen in the history of the league, at least in the modern NHL. And I mean, where has he gone from that point except for backwards? It's really, really troubling. And that kind of goes back to the point that like, I'm not totally against the idea of potentially trading him, obviously depending on what the return is. And I know you can say like, oh, you could say that about any player, but like, I wouldn't have, if you would have told me, like, in terms of like a realistic thing, like not to be like, oh, you wouldn't trade Connor McDavid for him. But like, realistically speaking, if you would have told me before this season about trading him, I would have said under zero circumstances, could you do that? And I have super backed off of that sense. And I hate it. I hate it.
Wow. Speaking of things we hate, there's a bit of an officiating crisis this week in the NHL.
Hate that.
Yeah.
Hate that.
For those who haven't heard about this, during the Nashville game on Tuesday night, official Tim Peel, who I think everyone who's a hockey fan probably has heard of
at
some point.
Over 1,000 games in the league. He's refed at the Olympics, Stanley Cups.
He has not refed the Stanley Cup.
Has he not?
No.
Are you sure?
I really? Heard that stat today from ESPN's Greg Wyshynski.
He never did a Stanley Cup. Yeah. Get out. Oh, maybe
very
I just
telling.
Saw Stanley
you know
Cup
why?
Playoffs.
Because he sucks.
Well, yeah.
Well, everyone reps the playoffs. There's 8 games like a night going
on. Yeah.
Or whatever it is. Anyway, so he was caught on a hot mic basically saying that he gave a penalty to Victor Arvidsson because he wanted to get a penalty to Nashville early in the period. He wanted to get it out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
And so this not only speaks to Tim Peel's bad reputation, which quickly you might know from two main things. Well, you know what those two things are besides him sucking?
What is it besides him sucking?
One, he was suspended for being photographed in a bar taking tequila shots with Greg Wyshynski.
Yikes. Oh, I do know the other one. What? He got shot in the balls and they scored a goal.
Yes. Someone hit the puck so hard off his cup that it deflected like 15 feet into the net.
Shout out to our former sponsor, Manscaped.
Yeah. He probably needed to do a little bit of manscaping. Yeah. That. Yeah. He went down. That, I mean, that was a serious... I mean, that's it went 15 feet at least.
It was all the way
in the corner and it went in the net.
Absolutely nuts.
So he's had some problems. He has a reputation as a terrible ref. And that's why I say he's never refed a Stanley Cup final game, because the best refs get to ref those. Mm-hmm. And he's not those. Well, anyway, he was fired more or less this morning. He was soon to retire. The season 6 weeks away from the finish.
Yep.
Who knows if he was going to do the playoffs or not. But he's done. The NHL didn't fire him. They more or less said he's done doing games. So that's not that much of a punishment, but it is. They're saying something there. However, we know the NHL is full of shit.
Yeah.
We know that guys like Tim Peel do that. And the rest of the refs are smart enough to not just say it out loud when they're wearing a mic.
Yeah. He said the quiet part out loud.
Yeah.
In reality, they know. Yes. And that's what, if we're also being honest too, that's what the league wants. They want stuff like that.
Yes.
Games to be called that way. So that's kind of what was puzzling. I'm sorry. Go ahead though.
Well, so what it gets to is I think most hockey fans probably know this, but power plays and penalty kills in an average game are usually about even,
mm-hmm.
which is insane, right? That's not how penalties work. That's not how it works. Let's say in the NFL, where penalties are a thing. You'll see that from time to time, a team has significantly more penalties than the other one. You know, that happens a lot. First of all, that happened in the Super Bowl this year. That was literally the last NFL game to happen. It's happened to the Bills over the years.
Mm-hmm.
This year in particular, it happened the other way for the Bills, where they didn't take a lot of penalties and sometimes their opponents did.
Surprisingly.
But whatever, either way, same thing with fouls in the NBA, fouls in the NCAA.
Yeah.
There are makeup calls from time to time, but it's not like, oh, we got to keep this pretty even. And this isn't just like something that we've noticed. It's not anecdotal. This has been statistically proven.
Mm-hmm.
So Rob Volman, who's one of the pioneers of advanced stats. I saw
this today. This is pretty cool. Yeah.
He found out in his, like he wrote Hockey Abstract as a book in 2013. And he basically found that there was no value to trying to get players who were good at taking penalties. Guys like Pat Coletta, weirdly,
mm-hmm.
always took way more penalties than always drew way more penalties than he took.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a valuable player in that sense. But there was no sense in trying to get a bunch of those guys, because refs just will not call more penalties on the other team than you.
Right.
At least consistently. So over a long enough period of time, you're just playing the same amount of power plays as your opponents.
Yep.
Not exactly the same, but mostly the same. So that leads to a bunch of weird incentives. And that doesn't even get to the fact that they don't call penalties late in the third period in tie games. They don't call the penalties in overtime. They don't call penalties in playoff overtime. And they barely call penalties in the playoffs at all.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is, I think they don't want to decide the game, quote unquote, on a bad call. But every time you miss a penalty, that's a bad call.
That's what I was about to say. That's what they're doing.
And instead of occasionally making a bad call or a weak call that decides the game when someone scores on the ensuing power play, you're deciding that you're going to change the entire sport, basically.
They do the wrong thing anytime they're faced with a crisis, the league. And the reason that they do it, it's funny too, because it is intriguing to me from a PR perspective, because in reality, that's a lot of the moves that they make in the league office, I think, is because of public perception. And from like a PR point of view, where they'll jump to make a move on something or act swiftly, like with Tim Peel, for example. Another thing that comes to mind is the offside review after the one in a million moment where Matt Duchene was way over the line when he was with Colorado, and then all of a sudden we need to enact an offside review. Like, nobody likes that. Nobody likes the offside review. As far as the Tim Peel thing goes, he's doing what all of them are doing. And again, it's ignoring what the real issue is, which is you're completely right. They ignore the root issue of this rather than, you know, and instead of actually trying to do something to address it, they will, you know, sacrifice Tim Peel, even though, he does suck, but like making him kind of like the sacrificial lamb and then not changing anything at all, because they're not going to. Even in the video of him saying that, right after he says, I wanted to get a call out of the way early, the other linesman is like, yeah, Yeah. Like, no, you know what I mean? Like, if
they all know.
Exactly. They all know. It's just he was the one who, like I said, he said the quiet part out loud. And absolutely. It's just so it's funny to like think about it from a PR perspective, because like I think I mentioned before on the show, like I work for a PR firm, and it's just so perplexing to me that I'd love to know who's advising them on some of this stuff, because acting swiftly and having a quick response to crisis is good,
yeah,
but not if your response rings hollow and you're not actually doing something to address the root issue at hand. You're just doing something just to kind of, you know, put a little bow on it to make it seem like, oh yeah, we did something, but in reality you didn't do anything.
Yeah, so I think we're talking about two separate issues with officiating too, not us, but I think there are two separate
issues. yeah
So there's the one issue that we just talked about, which is that the penalties have to be even, mm-hmm. which is ridiculous and stupid,
mm-hmm.
and gives the other team carte blanche to commit penalties if they already have
it. Does the thing that they're trying to say that they're preventing.
Yes. Yeah. The other thing is that there are penalties that you can commit that the refs just don't call.
Yes.
And it's because it's partially because they want to call things even. Now, there was a time, we remember when we got into hockey, it was really boring. Mm. I mean, we didn't think that because we were kids, and you know, kids are entertained by dumb things.
Yes.
But there's a time when if let's say you're Yamir Yager and you're coming through the neutral zone and you're coming, you know, on a, you know, you're going right by a defenseman or something, or say I'm a winger even,
mm-hmm.
and you're going towards my two defensemen, kind of skating with a lot of steam, I could just grab the back of your jersey,
mm-hmm.
and no one would call that. Sometimes you could just tackle someone.
People pointed out that's what Anaheim did in their cup year. That's yes. literally what they did, because they knew that they weren't going to call it.
Yes. They were even dirtier than
that. Yeah, right.
But like, you could also, like, someone's going by a same situation, slap them on the hand. And, ah, wow, that hurt. Like, I might lose the puck. And subsequently, scoring went way down. And that was tied to goaltending got way better.
Mm-hmm.
Players in general got better, which means lower scoring because there's less space on the ice and people are faster. And I suppose coaches became more conservative at the same time. But the penalty part of that, the NHL decided they actually wanted to do something about after the lockout.
Mm-hmm.
So what did they do? The first year they said, if you are slashing guys in the hand or you're clutching and grabbing, that will be called. That version of interference will be called. Or right. slashing, obviously.
Right.
Or hooking, however you want to look at it. Like, and what happened that year? Even strength scoring didn't change much. The game didn't change much, except that those got called. Those are penalties, and power play scoring was higher than it's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
So scoring in general did go way up, but almost entirely in the power play.
Right.
So what happens after that? They tone it down, but also players tone it down. The Ducks do win the cup playing incredibly dirty.
Mm-hmm.
But over those next few years, you don't see guys clutch and grab. You don't see guys grab jerseys. You don't see guys slash people in the hands anymore and get away with it. And scoring went down again, and now in the past few years, it's actually gone up. It was down to, I think in 2015-16, it was down to 5.4 goals a game.
Were you the one who tweeted about this earlier? I thought,
yeah, I'm trying to remember without looking, but I think it was like 5.4 goals a game.
Yeah.
Which is very
That
low.
Was the year that Jamie Benn won the Art Ross,
it was the year
right?
after that.
The year, okay, okay, yeah.
Year Jamie Benn, though, was pretty much identical. The worst year was the year before the lockout in 03-04.
Horrible.
It was like 5.1 yeah. or something like that, which is absurdly low. So the only year has been over 6 between, so 95-96 is the turning point. That's the last good year.
Mm-hmm.
The next year, it's under 6 goals per game. It's above 6 for that lockout year, but 2 goals a game are scored in the power play, which is insane. That's not actually better hockey. Mm-hmm. It served a purpose. There's a means to an end, but like that, you didn't want that in the long term. And it went under 2 immediately after that. I think people will forget, and people will be surprised to hear that 0607 scoring was not up. Mm-hmm. The Sabres were just really good at scoring.
Mm-hmm.
And it's gone, the past couple of years, it's gotten above 6 again. It was very nearly 6 in, I think, 17-18. And then it was above 6 in 18-19 and 19-20. This year it's back down. Who knows why that is? Maybe it's the pandemic or the short season. Who knows? But the NHL should be looking at this and going, okay, scoring, as an addendum to that, power plays are not way up or anything like that. This is not driven by power plays, driven by even strength scoring. The NHL could look at that and go, okay, this really worked in the long term. Whatever they were doing,
mm-hmm.
clutch and grab, all that, they got rid of it. Now there are things on the ice that are still legal that shouldn't be that aren't legal, but they're not being called.
Mm-hmm.
For example, you've probably noticed you can cross-check someone whenever you want. And unless it's some like horrifically dirty play on the boards, the guy gets hurt, guy goes down for a minute, you're not going to get called. If you're in front of the net, if let's say, who's a big forward? I don't know, if Jeff Skinner stand in front of the net and... That's not a good example of a big forward, but whatever.
You can even say like Sam. Sam's in that from Sam's.
Yeah,
always Sam is probably actually the perfect example for this because Sam gets crushed all the time. Yeah. That's a huge reason.
Like, it is illegal in the rule book. And you probably, if you're a casual fan, you might not even know this. You cannot have both hands on your stick and have your stick come into contact with someone. You can't do it. That's cross-checking. Mm-hmm. Immediately a penalty. In the NHL, not only can you do that, you can just wail on someone on the small of their back to get them out of the front of the net. That's ridiculous. You shouldn't be allowed to do that.
It's nuts. It's nuts.
I'm not saying you shouldn't be physical in front of the net either. Like, you can jockey for position and all that stuff. That's part of every level of hockey. But Taylor Hall got hurt on a play this past week. Not too badly hurt. He got hit in the face with the puck. And that's bad luck. But it only happened because PK Subban just destroyed him from behind with a cross check. And that's additionally, you can interfere. You interfere with stars for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. We all know in the NBA, stars get the best calls.
Same thing with quarterbacks.
Yes. Yes. That's a great example. They just get better calls than everyone else. You can't do anything to them. And it's because I think more than anything else, the league goes, those are our guys. They succeed. We succeed.
Yep.
The NHL, it's the opposite. If you look at the guys, like I was talking about
earlier, please take a golf swing at Connor McDavid's ankles.
Yes.
Just go for it.
We'd love if you murdered Leon. Like, I don't know why, but those guys never have good penalties drawn to taken ratios. Like someone like Pat Coletta would. It's always guys like that. It's never Connor McDavid, even though Connor McDavid gets wailed on all the time. In fact, Chris Versteeg just brought this up on TV not too long ago. Why does the NHL let this shit happen? Like, you can watch, someone can put together a great compilation of guys, stars, especially finesse stars, just getting destroyed on illegal plays or just getting held, interfered with.
Mm-hmm.
You just start calling that shit and you could have scoring back up to, I don't know, 6.5, 7 goals a game. People might want to watch that. Watch the goddamn sport.
Yep.
You're getting back to ESPN.
Well,
you're getting a national audience again.
And I think, Taylor, I think even taking it a step further, the league hasn't adapted with its players in terms of making scoring like go like higher. The terminology I just used there was terrible, so I apologize for that poorly constructed sentence. But essentially what I'm getting at is, going back to your point from before, over the past 10, 15 years, we'll even just kind of, you know, shrink it down to, the quality of skill in the league, both forwards, defensemen, and goaltending has all gone up. And something that is such a shame is, to me at least, is that you have guys like McDavid, you have guys like Marner and Kane, who I'm thinking of, who are just like electric skaters, unbelievable stick handlers. And the thing that they're really good at that makes them so special is that they are really good with the puck in tight areas, because like you had said before, with players now being so much faster, guys filling gaps a lot quicker. So it's really special when you're the kind of guy who is, again, a difference maker, like those three guys who I just said, when like the puck is on your stick, like you can do anything. But like, imagine what would happen if you made the rink just like a little bit bigger and you gave these guys more space. And imagine what would happen if you made the nets a little bit bigger so that these goalies who are freaks, who look like the Michelin man, but who are also insanely talented, making it a little bit tougher on them. To me, the league, like, those are two big moves that you would make, but like that to me is adapting with the talent that you have in the league right now. Let's be real here. You know, it's no secret. And you alluded to it before, the NHL in terms of its entertainment value is trailing the NBA and the NFL from just like the casual sports fan perspective, people who are hockey fans, myself included. Like, I think hockey is the most exciting sport, but like, what is going to be, what's more exciting, seeing like LeBron and like James Harden and the, like in the Nets going head to head, and guys are putting up like 30 points a game each, scoring is really high, it's a, you know, 115 112 game, or watching a hockey game that's like 2-1? You know, hockey, it's just such a fast-paced sport. It's the only sport that is, I mean, really, and if we're being honest, like no other team sports are as fast paced as hockey is, which is something that they need to use to their benefit. So to me, if you're, as we're talking about scoring, and I know I'm kind of pivoting in a different direction here, but like, it just seems like such a slam dunk that if they expanded the rink size, and to be honest, they don't even have, I can't think of what the dimensions are off the top of my head, but not, you don't even have to go like Olympic. I mean, I think it'd be awesome if they did, but like, you make the rink bigger so that you give your stars more space, more, because not only does it give more space, but like this may seem obvious, but it gives them more opportunity to be creative with the puck. So you have that, larger net sizes, so that you're going to really help scoring go up. And then you're going to have games that are like, you know, 5-4, 6-5 games. Like, I'm not going to be heartbroken if there's no more, you know, goalies who have like sub 2.5 goals against averages. If like the new norm for goaltending is like 3 goals against is like good, like that's a good thing for the league. Yeah. That's a good thing. Like, I'm sorry, but like the way, and I think the other side of this too, one thing, this is maybe even getting into like the psychological side of it a little bit more, but like for the NHL's perspective, and this is, I'm going to wrap up after this, but like, that is the one sport also where like you, they just don't let players' true personalities shine through. And in the cases that that does happen, oftentimes those guys are, you know, have ostracized. Yeah, they're ostracized. Absolutely they are. So like, what do you want to do here? Do you want to make this so that Connor McDavid can succeed in the league, or do you want to make it so that Andrei Vasilevsky can, you know? To me, it's like, let's make the guys who are actually making like the highlight reel plays make the game more conducive to their skill set, rather than trying to make this like a goalie's world and making it easier on the goalies. Like, make it harder, because then that's going to separate like the good goalies from the average goalies. Because right now there's also like a decent amount of overlap in that. I mean, there are guys like Vasilevsky who, you know, are definitely in like a league of their own, but generally speaking, a lot of those middle tier goalies are all pretty similar when it comes to like numbers and ability. But if you were to make the nets bigger like that, and you make the rink bigger, then you're going to really start to see the disparity between goalie talent. And that's something that the league should want to pursue. What are your thoughts?
Absolutely. So a kind of important thing that goes along with what we said earlier is what happened in goaltending over the past 30 years. There was a time, it wasn't that long ago, where there weren't really goaltending coaches.
Mm-hmm.
Guys just went out there and did their best to stop the puck. So no one knew how efficient the butterfly style would be.
Mm-hmm.
No one had
goalies are like, just were so bad. If you go back and watch 80s, 70s, 80s, 90s highlights, they're terrible.
That's one, the biggest reason and the easiest selling point to anyone from ages 5 to 500 of bigger nets is just this. Listen, and especially for people that are over 40, that listen, if there's anyone 40, 45, 50, remember a time, maybe from Buffalo, maybe you were a big fan of Gilbert Perreault, when you could get a head of steam going, come right over the blue line, slap the puck, and you'd think that might go in. And a lot of times it did. He probably scored a lot of goals that way. Remember that? And who does that now? No one. Because it's a terrible, terribly inefficient shot, because any goalie can stop that. Well, the Nets are the same size as they were in 1975. That's a problem, because goalies are bigger. Their equipment is so much bigger.
Mm-hmm.
They have way more sophisticated styles, and they're way more fundamentally sound, which actually.
And just athletic. Is like, that's the other side of it. And athletic, too.
Yeah. There's a whole. Goaltending has been figured out, where there was pretty much no thought put into it for a long time. Now there's a ton of thought put into it, probably too much. But it also is less exciting because there was a time people pointed out that there goal scoring was way up. Let's say 1985. Scoring was way up. Scoring at that point was almost 8 goals a game. So significantly more, almost twice as much as it would be in a few years. Hits, big hits all the time. Fights all the time, and exciting saves. And now, yeah, you're getting goal scoring a little bit more. It's going up a little bit, but you're not getting what you used to in goal scoring. Big hits, no, that's probably a good thing though. I mean, it was exciting and so were fights, but there's a reason that's going away and not much you can do about it. Big saves? Not anymore. Mm-hmm. Now guys are just fundamentally sound and they're always in the right position. There's no need to make big saves.
Nobody's like, really
know what they're doing.
Flashing the glove very much, you know? Like you don't see it.
Like Hasek is probably one of the last guys who just played terrible fundamental hockey, like for a goaltender. Mm-hmm. But he was just so incredible what he did. Obviously he had his own way of doing things and it really worked, to say the least.
Yeah.
But you don't get that anymore. So I think
even the chaotic energy.
Yeah. And like, this is again, probably going to make older people that listen mad, but like defensemen were terrible. That's another thing that's gotten way better. Mm-hmm. Guys, like, I guess part of this is guys didn't, hockey wasn't their full-time job, or if it was, they didn't feel like, oh, our team got eliminated from the playoffs in late April, I'm not gonna be back till September, I have to work out a lot and be in really good shape that whole time.
Mm-hmm.
That obviously was not the case if you see anyone's body from that entire time.
Yeah, period. I mean, dude, like,
so defensemen just weren't as good either. Like, Phil Housley is a revelation because he could skate forwards and backwards.
Right.
Like, is well, this they, allowed?
But even, like, comparatively speaking, like, you would never get a situation like the Avalanche today where their third best defenseman is Devin Toews, and he's, like, incredible.
Yeah.
Like, really good. Yeah. Where you have a Cale Makar and a Sam Girard, like, ahead. Like, you would not have that kind of a setup on a team at any point. I would be shocked.
Well, defensemen were supposed to, like, be bruisers too,
mm-hmm.
which from, you know, from one perspective that could say, yeah, forwards might be intimidated to go down low and in the corners and to get beat up and cross checks, which obviously still happened back then,
mm-hmm.
or knocked out if it was a big enough hit. But also it meant that there was a lot of space because they weren't closing in on you very quickly or efficiently. It was just different back then. I think there was just less of an idea of how efficient every position should be. And efficiency, although it makes sense and it's fun to talk about and you want your team to be efficient, it actually isn't good for the overall product. I think efficiency has been really bad for the MLB in particular. I think it's made baseball a lot more boring.
So boring. I'm not even a baseball. I used to be a huge baseball. I do not watch baseball pretty much at all anymore, other than like keeping up on Twitter because of the fact that, yeah, it's just like.
And that cuts two ways, obviously. We could do a whole podcast on what's going on.
Yeah, TV. Yeah.
But like
yeah.
in basketball, I think there might be a point where it gets kind of boring to watch everyone just shoot threes. We'll see, though, on that. It hasn't gotten boring yet.
Yeah, but wouldn't you say with basketball, though, the thing is that, like, that I think is also a product of just, like, the players. Like, there wasn't anything that the league really did that, like, changed it in the way that, like, the NHL would need to make these changes to, like, increase scoring. Like, in reality, it was, like, Steph Curry came along, and he's, like, a once-in-a-lifetime kind of talent with his shooting talent. And then you have Klay Thompson, and they were just, like, they, like the Warriors changed modern basketball as we know it. I don't, and correct me if I'm wrong, I could be wrong, but like to me, it wasn't like the league really had to step in and do anything. It was more so like,
no, the league didn't do anything in baseball
either, these guys. Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. So it's like, you know, with basketball, you just have the talent there. And then people are like, oh my God, we could just win games this way. We don't need to have like this dominant, like down low presence. Like it probably is just more effective to be able to just be able to shoot the three ball.
Yes, but no, the league never does anything in these circumstances. Like it just right. it just happens. I also say, NBA is interesting because Curry and Thompson were like almost like a perfect storm type thing because mm-hmm. there were teams throughout the past, I don't know, 25 years or so that could shoot the three, and it never occurred to anyone that this was just like an efficient way to not have to be good at other things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like the Celtics in 2002 was that they made the conference finals. Mm-hmm. Big surprise. They were barely 500 team. And then, you know, Antoine Walker and Paul Pierce get hot in the playoffs and they're in the conference finals. In fact, I think they were leading the conference finals at one point. You know, this team was not good. If you look at their starters,
it was bad. It was bad.
And they just were good at shooting threes, so they made it. If you look at, there's a few other teams throughout the years, but another one that jumps out is the 2011 Mavericks beat the Heat in the finals, the big three Heat in the finals. They could shoot threes. They couldn't just shoot threes. That team was really good. Like it's probably an underrated team historically, but they were a three seed.
Point still stands.
Absolutely. They could shoot threes. But also Daryl Morey in Houston knew about, was trying to build a really good, efficient three-point shooting team and layup team before the Warriors like really took off.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that might have come anyway without Curry and Thompson, but Curry and Thompson just were like, it just put it on the forefront.
You needed the guys to do it.
Yeah. Also, a shout out to the 2014 Spurs because the Spurs were really good at shooting threes too.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, so were the Heat, the two Heat teams that won. So it was getting to that point. And then when the Warriors won in 15, which was a big surprise at the time, I was like, wow, jump shooting teams, they do it. They can right. do it. Like that was more than any other team, just like a jump shooting team. And then obviously they win 73 games and that puts it at the forefront. But I would mm-hmm. say there was some, like Houston could argue. The thing is why I say Houston is just as important, if not more important than Golden State, is because Golden State proved that if you had the best three-point shooter of all time and another top 10 three-point shooter of all time, you could succeed.
Yeah.
Houston in 2015, when they made the conference finals and upset Los Angeles, proved that you could just have a bunch of guys that aren't good at shooting threes, and that was still pretty efficient.
Mm-hmm.
Like they were just okay. They had like Josh Smith and other guys out there like just gunning, and Harden wasn't even playing that well, and it worked. The other half of that equation is layups when you shoot twos because you don't want to take long twos, mm-hmm. I guess. But yeah, like that was a tangent. To get back to the goaltending thing real quick.
Oh, yeah.
Bigger nets. That's important because you can't do smaller equipment because you always lose that PR battle to the Players Association. Make the net bigger by, I don't know. half an inch to an inch on either side.
I was just going to say an inch. Just do that.
Yeah. I mean, and goalies will get better, and it'll force goalies to be, make more athletic saves, and it'll open things up more organically, because it'll just be like, you know what? If a guy comes over the blue line, maybe he could take a shot. Maybe shooting just in a little triangle in front of the net isn't the only way goals will get
Right. So, yeah, I completely agree. I think it won't happen, which is the sad thing to say. Like, they won't. I think especially the net thing might happen, but like expanding the rink size, I don't think will, unfortunately, even though I think that would be, I have nothing to base this on, but I think it'd be just as effective as widening the net. So it's like, why not do both?
Yeah. I also, do you think that Sabres fans have a warped perception of how fun the NHL was from 05 to 07 because of how fun the Sabres were?
Yes. 100% without even
a, I saw a lot of people thought. Referencing 07. 06, 07 is like, oh, like specifically.
Well,
but you know what?
I think it's
this, good. This year has virtually identical goal sport scored per game to that year. It's almost the same.
I think it's because
it the was last so, years were higher.
But it was so top heavy because you had guys who were putting up like 120 points, like Thornton and Yager at the time.
You would, you like we do now, like Kucherov 2 years ago had 128. Yeah. And last year, Dreisaitl,
but it was way more than that though. Like Kucherov was like way up there. I'm pretty sure, wasn't it in 2006 that there was like more than 10 guys who had over 100 points?
But there would have been last year, I believe, if the season actually finished out. Fair. I could be wrong about that. I have to look into it. But okay. Like, we're about to have two straight seasons that aren't 100, you know, that aren't 82 game seasons. Mm-hmm. So, but it definitely, so like Thornton had 125 points.
Mm-hmm.
That is true.
Yeah.
I think McDavid in a full season, if he is as good next year as he's been this year, he could have like 130. I mean, this year he's going to be way above that pace. He's playing at like 150 point pace. But like I said, he plays in like basically.
It's JV hockey. Club hockey.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say like, I'm trying to, the Missouri Valley. Plays in the Missouri Valley Conference of hockey. Or like the Colonial. I don't know. Missouri Valley might have a Final Four team this year. So
it's like putting LeBron in the Missouri Valley in the MAC.
Yeah. Also, like 05, 06, they had those a bunch of the Sabres games on like a year ago at this time.
Mm-hmm. Like, they were doing all the reunions. Beginning of the pandemic. Yeah.
And they were, man, there was a lot of goals scored on power plays. And like, there's some level of excitement to that, but like, I don't know how much better the even strength hockey was across the board, but it was definitely better for the Sabres.
It's the
Sabres ruled that for that short time.
Well, yeah. And it, to your point too, it's the same thing that was our big criticism with Ralph Kruger, with how he approached the Sabres, that you should not, the league itself, in the same way that hockey teams should not, the league should not rely on power play scoring to be the driver of scoring across the league. It needs to happen at 5-on-5, and you have easy solutions right in front of you that you could take that would do that pretty much instantly.
Yes.
I think there would maybe be a little bit of an adjustment period for guys, like for like the shooting perspective, but it would be that easy for them to do. So do we want to transition now?
Yes, I have something for us. I'm just up here. It's a, let's see here. So, okay, I've talked about this before, but my advisor in college and a guy I took some classes with, his name is Paul Wieland.
Mm-hmm.
He's a Bishop Tynan grad like us and a St. Bonaventure grad like me.
BTSJ.
Have I ever talked about that on here? I went to St. Bonaventure.
I thought you went to Canisius.
No, common misconception.
Oh, wow. I had no idea that you went to St. Bonaventure. I don't think anybody on Twitter knew that either.
Yeah, we don't talk about it very much. We try to keep it quiet. We're quiet people. Anyway, so Paul was like the second or third employee of the Sabres ever. He was hired by the Knoxes back when it was a pretty small operation. He went on from just being their PR guy. He's the guy who came up with drafting a fake player, Taro Tsujimoto. He was incredibly vital, you know, in those early days. He played practice goalie with the team for like 15 years. He also became, I think at one point, was a color commentator and then eventually ran their TV broadcasts. He worked there for the first 25 years of existence, which is about half their existence now. He then worked for, I think, at Hartford for 1 year before they moved, worked for ESPN after that, and then came back to Bonaventure to teach. And he ran the broadcast for the basketball games, which is where, you know, I got to know him pretty well. in addition to being my advisor. But anyway, he, even back then, so when I was a senior in 2014, 15, the Sabres were pretty bad that year. I don't know if you remember.
No.
I was a lot more hopeful. It's a tank year. I thought we're getting Eichel or McDavid. Things are getting better. We have a lot of good prospects. And he was like, this team sucks. These owners are idiots. They're going nowhere. Which is an interesting thing. You know, you would think someone who's been around the team for as long as him would be more optimistic. Well, anyway, he started a Facebook group I see called Saber Success. And I want to say two things before we get in this. I'm reading this because I want more people to hear it, because I think he's 100% right. And I think it needs to be said how many people throughout the past years are going on the record, people that were involved with the Sabres, saying that this is bad. That includes Larry Quinn. That includes Ted Black, more or less. That includes a bunch of former captains, alumni. And this is, you know, it's about to include Paul Whelan. So what he says, return the Buffalo Sabres to the fans. I'm Paul Whelan, the original Sabres public relations director. I joined the team in August of 1970 and stayed with the Knox brothers and the fans for a quarter of a century. At one time, I was a practice goalie for the team and was inside the players' collective persona more than any front office type could be. I've agonized over the Sabres' fall from grace in recent years, from the day Terry and Kim Pegula took over. They've demonstrated they couldn't successfully run a one-car funeral, much less a National Hockey League franchise. I'm embarrassed. Every other Sabres fan should feel the same. Therefore, with today's announcement, I urge all of you who feel that way to join me in lobbying the Erie County Legislature to make a trade with the Pegulas. The legislature can and must take over the hockey team. Remember, it can't get any worse. The trade would give fracking rights to the Pegulas under Chestnut Ridge and Orchard Park, county land known for its winter sports. If in negotiations the Pegulas want more, they can be offered land beneath all county parks and recreation properties. The deal would be clean and simple, quid pro quo. The Pegulas would get something they know something about, namely destroying infrastructure forever, polluting the earth and water, and making billions in the process. That's what they do, and I salute them for their indifference to the earth. But I don't salute them for their indifference to the hockey fans of Western New York and Southern Ontario. Join me in asking legislators to take over the Buffalo Sabres. You'll be glad you did. So also I should mention the other thing I was going to say is that he, if you know him, he has a certain sense of humor. He's not actually saluting them for destroying the earth. But you probably got that from the post.
Yeah.
So
gosh,
yeah, Scorched Earth. He's a really fun guy. If you
that was a great post.
Yes, now that great post. You know, I think we're seeing the light at the end of the tunnel with COVID. If he occasionally does speaking events, I would recommend going to see him. It's very interesting.
We should go sometime.
Yeah, I saw him in West Seneca last year. Was that last year? No, must have been 2019 because it couldn't have been 2020. So anyway, to round this thing out.
Well, can we actually just make a quick mention of the events that unfolded today?
I almost forgot about that.
Yeah.
That is important.
Did want to bring up what had transpired on 97 Rock earlier today on Morning Bull. Rich Gensler has subsequently been fired from PSE, but essentially what had happened, it's not even worth repeating what they had said because it was just so racist, grotesque, out of touch. But essentially they made some pretty messed up comments on the air today.
The Morning Bull show it's Rich Gansler's show where he also has Rob Lederman and another co-host whose name I'm forgetting right now, but I guess that's not important.
I can't remember the other woman. Story. Yeah.
Rob Lederman said some very insensitive things about Black women on the air today, and that was subsequently
called out
viral on Twitter. And pretty quickly the Sabres cut their ties with him. Now he's been
there. Roswell also pulled their ads with 97 Rock as well.
So I don't know what's going to happen with that show, but so kind of the pertinent Sabres news here is they, you know, he was their in arena host, you would say.
Mm-hmm.
So he no longer is.
He wasn't even that good at it either. I mean, I didn't
Did he start at the beginning of 2019-20 or 2018-19? Because he did it for 2 years, right?
I think it was 2 years he would have been there. So yeah. The other thing too that I think is important to mention, like, it's bad to say, but I'm not necessarily surprised because I've heard just from times that I've been on, like listening to the radio. I don't really listen to the radio much when I'm in the car. Usually I'll just listen to stuff on my phone, but there have been times like, you know, where just by chance I'll throw on 97 Rock, or if I'm in the car with my dad loves classic rock. They have said some very questionable things in the past that have made me be like, whoa, what the hell? Like, did they really just say that? So sadly, I'm not surprised by this. That doesn't change how, like, just let's be honest, like, fucked up it is in reality. And just, yeah, it was really bad. And I think it's at least important, you know, that we wanted to bring that up and call that out, because I mean, that just, like, casual racism like that cannot and should not be tolerated. And at every turn, it needs to be called out.
That's right.
I mean, yeah. Yeah. Right. Anyways, moving on. You have a quiz. Is that so?
Yeah. Let's move on to something more positive here. It's the
fuck Morning Bull. That's my,
all my homies hate
Morning Bull. All my homies, we hate Morning Bull.
I actually did used to listen to that show because it used to be, people might remember, Norton in the Morning, I'm pretty sure.
So, yeah, I don't know.
Ed Norton with, so Rich Gensler didn't used to be on the show. I think he was on 103.3 The Edge. But anyway, it's probably pretty offensive then too, because it's Morning Zoo stuff.
It's just,
also, you know what? To say this as well, Shred and Ragged is popular around here, and I don't have any real, like, deep-seated issue with those guys. It's not like I hate those guys or want them fired. Maybe they've apologized to the Sun. I used to listen, like, every day on my way home with, like, my mom, and I liked it a lot when I was in middle school. But there were some wildly offensive things that were said. And this is, I don't want to do the different era thing, but I mean, the aughts were so different. The aughts, comedy in the aughts was, like, so cruel, and, like, even, like, on the quote-unquote, let's say, liberal side, the John Stewarts of the world, insanely, like, weirdly cruel for that 10 years. Now there's some separation. It's just bizarre.
Well, and that's, I think, goes even into, like, the greater conversation about how, like, you know, you had a whole decade of that, and now you have these comedians who are like, oh, I can't say something racist anymore. How am I supposed to be funny if I can't be racist and an asshole and sexist and judge that, people on their sexual identities? Like,
yeah, that's actually the easiest way to make money if you're a comedian.
It's ridiculous.
It's like to do that and then just be like, oh my God, I'm getting canceled. Well, and get a million fans out of it and like start a Patreon.
And that's what, like, the, oh, I thought you were going to say start a Parler account. But not that's, anymore. Yeah. Well, and it's just ridiculous. Like, the fact that people can't grasp the fact of the matter is, like you said, the stuff has never been acceptable. It's never been okay. But, like, culturally speaking, people, for lack of a better way of putting it, were able to get away with it for a while. And now it's like, dude, as society changes, you got to understand that, like, just because you thought something was okay 10 years ago does not mean that it, one, was okay at the time. And two, it sure as hell doesn't mean that it's okay now.
Yeah.
So, adapt or die, like, in every facet. Like,
I mean, if you did something in the past, you just, I don't know, you just, like, nothing to do about it now, just, like, be better.
Yeah, that's all that you have to do. Just not compare people's race to the kind of toast that you like, you fucking idiots.
Yeah, I don't even, it was a really strained,
it was so weird.
All other,
and things. He even said that it wasn't Rich who had said it. It was, what the hell's the other guy's name? Rob
Lederman. Yeah,
he even said, before even making the vile comment, being like, oh, I'm probably gonna get in trouble for this. So it's like, you knew what you were going to say, you took the time to acknowledge that it was probably a bad idea for you to say it, you thought about it, and then you were like, yeah, I'm gonna just say it anyways. Yeah. Like,
well,
it's just bullshit,
by the way.
What's that?
Do you have a pen?
I can find one if you can vamp for a few seconds while I go grab one.
Yeah, no problem.
Go ahead.
Well, folks, it's an interesting quiz we have on our hands here. And the impetus for me starting the quiz is that I think the Sabres team going into the season, most people that I say realistic fans like me thought the Sabres were not going to be a playoff team. I thought, like, maybe if everything went well and they got insanely lucky, they might be, but probably they're going to finish around sixth in the division. They're going to be inconsequential in a 56 game season. Maybe they'd have around between 50 and 56 points. Nothing special, nothing memorable. Big disappointment again. But I thought with an unlucky enough season, especially with how bad the goaltending is and had the capability of being, things could get kind of bad. You know, they could be, you know, a bottom five team. I didn't think they'd be worse than, like, Chicago, Detroit, Ottawa. I thought those are going to be the bottom three. And two of those three have been pretty bad. But, man, I did not see this coming, because I think they are running headlong into being one of the worst teams of all time. It's going to be hard to judge because it's a short season, but I think we'll be able to do it. And I think I haven't completely come to terms with how bad the season is yet. Just kind of numbness washing over me every time they lose 3-2 or 2-0 or whatever these scores have been. So in the spirit of that, I wanted to ask you,
oh boy,
about, you already look like you're in pain before I say this.
Yeah.
The worst teams of all time. Some of them, a sampling of them. This is not a list of
what do I need to know?
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you a year, a record, a point total, and a goal differential. But here's the thing though. Let's start with this. So the recent ones, I think you'll have a decent time remembering.
Okay.
The expansion ones, which is, I'm giving that more or less away. There was an expansion era in the NHL.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You're probably getting an expansion team.
So we're going to go year by year for who the worst team is? Or
no. I'm just going for a sampling of some of the worst. And these are all expansion era. So
okay.
It's all 67 plus. No, like World War II, all your players left to go fight, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
None of that. So these are just a sampling of some of the worst. Not even all of them. Just teams that I looked at and I was like, wow, that's insanely bad. But rest assured, these are all really bad teams. And with older ones, you might not get them right away, but I tried to pick ones that have some facts that stand out. Like, I didn't just pick, like, oh my God, Hartford went.
I know.
Had like 48 points this one year. Because, you know, before ties, there weren't as many points, and before overtime lost the same thing.
All right.
So I don't think this will be too hard based on the information I just gave you. I think you'll have heard of most of these teams. You'll be able to match up some expansion years. And of course, remember, some of the expansion teams aren't their first year, but it's just generally around that time. And the recent ones, I figure you might get.
Okay.
So let's start out with an easy one. 2019-20, this team went 17-49-5 with 39 points and a negative 122 goal differential.
That would be the Detroit Red Wings.
That is correct. Negative 122. They only played about 71 games.
That's pretty bad.
Yikes. 2016-17, this team went 22-56-4 with 48 points and a negative 112 point differential. They are the worst team in an 82 game season in the post lockout era, the post 05-06 lockout era.
16-17?
Mm-hmm.
It's not the Sabres.
It's not the Sabres.
No, I know.
Sabres are disappointing in a different way that year.
Yeah, no. So 16-17, they were. Would this be Colorado?
Colorado.
There we go.
Everybody say Colorado.
Led to them getting Cal Makar.
It did. They lost the lottery. They lost all three lottery spots and got Cal Makar.
Mm-hmm.
2014-15, this team went 23-51-8 with 54 points and a negative 113 goal differential.
I wonder who it could be. None other than the Buffalo Sabres.
See, the recent ones are good.
Can I make one comment going back really quick about the difference between comedy, by the way? Something I realized on like a lighter note. A lot of comedy from like the 2000s and even into like the 2010s is just like definitely kind of risky. But you know who has never faltered, who still lives up and is still, like, just looking back, it's still so great today? Lonely Island.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Unbelievable. I watched for the first time in a long time, like, threw it on the ground the other day, like, the music video for that. And, like, and then that led to just, like, a domino effect of me watching just, like, all of their music videos. Man, they hold up pretty well. Like really, really well. I was laughing my ass off. Sorry. I just wanted to get that out. Go listen to The Lonely Island.
Absolutely.
They're great. Anyways.
Fantastic. 06-07, this team went 22-48-12 with 56 points and a negative 89 goal differential.
06-07. Chicago. No?
No.
Damn. Wait, can I get another guess?
Well, I'll give you another guess. But I'm going to give you a hint.
I'm going to
get
wrong.
Half a point here.
Okay.
If you get this right. They made the playoffs the year before and after this.
Ooh. 06, 07?
Yep.
Okay. Philly?
That's correct.
Nice. Cool.
It's also process of elimination because it used to be a one team lottery.
That's why I was like,
has to be the team that took James Van Ringo.
JVR. Yep.
Yeah. It bridged the Forsberg and Danny Briere eras, the 6-0-7 team.
That's disgusting.
Because they signed Danny Briere right after the season. All right. We're into some older stuff here. 99-2000. This team went 14-57-7-4. 39 points and a negative 143 goal differential.
99-2000?
Yep.
I have a couple of teams in mind here. Is it Florida?
No, it is
Minnesota.
No, Minnesota was
Columbus.
No, Minnesota Columbus years were 2000, 2001. Right.
Okay. Yeah. I was going to say they would have been the next, that's why I thought Florida, because they would have been the next year. So then
it is the team that came in just before them.
That. Who?
The Atlanta Thrashers.
Oh my God. Wow. I didn't even think about that. I completely wasn't even thinking of them.
The 1997-98 team here went 17-55-10 with 44 points and a negative 118 goal differential.
I have no idea, but I'll just guess San Jose.
No, you're a little late on that. They're pretty good by this point. It's the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Oh man, yeah, that's
it. Was
yeah.
not it's not their first year either.
You're right. No, well, that's what I was. Expansion. I would have thought that it would have been San Jose, but because I knew it wasn't their first year, I knew they were. What were they like? 92 or something like that. That they came in
91 or 92. Yeah, they have a weird thing where they are awful for a few years,
and then they just
when they make the playoffs 1 year, and then they are unbelievably bad again in another year. And then they get pretty good, and they really haven't been bad since until last year.
Now, yeah.
Very interesting. They're a really good franchise. The Lightning also came in the early 90s, and they really did not get off the ground. I think they take LeCavalier here after they finish last in the season.
They do.
And then
he was
things get good.
Yeah.
They won a cup in
Wait, what years. Year was that?
98.
Yeah, right. Okay, yeah, yeah.
In 04, they won the cup.
That's crazy, crazy. Yeah. Yeah. Got lucky with St. Louis,
they
too.
They got terrible again really quick because then they got Stamkos.
Yeah, and then they just totally turned it around.
Yeah, wow, and, what a team, what a squad.
Oh, yeah.
All right, this 1992-93 team, there's actually two of them. We'll start with this one. This team went 11-71-2. This was an 84-game season, by the way, keep in mind.
Okay.
And it with a negative 196 goal differential.
Good Lord.
And 24 points. Hit 24 points.
Is this San Jose?
This is San Jose, yes.
Okay, yeah.
So 24 points in an 84-game season. They only tied for last place.
God, how many of these teams are we doing? How many more are there?
There's a few more.
Okay.
This team also in 92-93 went 10-70-4.
Wow.
24 points and a negative 193 goal difference.
10-70-4? Oh, my goodness. Tampa Bay.
No.
Damn.
I should have thrown this out there earlier, but there's only every city's only on here once.
Oh, that would have been good to know. Yeah. Okay. So
I'll let you slide. Yeah, I'll let you do
it. All right, cool. What's the year again?
92-93. Now, interestingly, well, I won't say too much about this team. I want to give it away.
Yeah. No, let me think on it. 92-93. Is this Anaheim?
No, that's a good guess. I think they came in just after this.
Yeah, you're right. That's why I was like, damn, that would maybe be like their first season.
You know what? This is Tampa's first season, actually, I believe.
That's why I fought them before.
Well, it's the Ottawa Senators.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah, they were really bad for a good long time.
Good
too.
For them.
And then they had like 6 years where they were unbelievably bad. And then they got
real good.
Real good, real fast.
Real good.
They lost in the playoffs to lower seeds a lot. And they got bad again. All right. 89-90. This team went 12-61-7, 31 points, and a negative 167 goal differential. Also,
so we're talking
worth noting there are 80 games. We're back to the 80s.
Okay, yeah. So we're at the end of the 80s here. So that at least can knock a few potential teams off. It'd be helpful too. It was easier when like the 2000s, I could do that all day because I could just think about who the lottery teams were, like the bottom three were that year.
Well, don't rule that.
No, I know. I'm just trying to think
there
about.
There was no lottery back then. No lottery at this point.
No, yeah. But that's what I mean. I don't know like draft classes as well, like in the 80s and stuff. 90s, I'm okay with.
Well, this is 90.
Same difference.
I think how there's about... facts that might help you out. If okay. you know the facts. I'm not going to tell you the facts, but
all right.
If you knew this fact, you might kick yourself after.
And you said only team is on here once? So
no, cities are only on here once. Cities.
Oh. Hmm. Hmm. Doing the Taylor Beard clutch right now. Damn, Taylor. I really don't even I don't know. I mean, I'll just throw someone out there, but Minnesota North Stars.
Man, that's a good guess. No, they did have some terrible seasons around.
That's
here.
Yeah.
Quebec.
Oh, yeah.
Which I thought
you
might know the fact they finished last 3 years in a row.
Yep. And that was what they would Lindros, and then he forced the trade, right?
Yeah. Lindros is the next year. Lindros is the last year they finished last. So the next season they would also finish last, and they didn't get Lindros out of it.
Yep. Worked out okay for them, though. Peter Forsberg, you know, not bad.
Yes.
Not bad.
It didn't work out for Quebec, but it did work out for the franchise.
For the franchise, at least. Getting Peter Forsberg. Yeah.
To pair with Joe Sakic.
Yeah, pretty nice. Pretty nice.
85-86, this team went 17-57-6 with 40 points and a negative 149 goal differential.
See, this is...
this is the toughest one.
All right. Hartford?
No.
Yeah.
This is... I'll give you half a point if you get it right after this one.
Okay.
This... team had was on a incredibly long streak of not winning the Stanley Cup, and that's something you wouldn't believe right now, or if you or anyone our age, that they ever run a incredibly long streak of not winning the Stanley Cup.
Detroit. Wow.
Half a point.
There we go. All right.
Yeah. All right, 83-84, this team went 16-58-6 with 38 points and a negative 136 goal differential. Remember, I told you, besides that last one, these last few older ones, you have a reason for knowing.
83-84, you said?
Yep.
My dude, I do not know what the reason is, but I'm sure, as you had said, once you – tell me after I inevitably get this wrong, I will be kicking myself. But 83-84. How about Los Angeles?
No, it is the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Oh, my God. I knew I should have knew that one, actually. Yeah, you're right, because then that would have been the Lemieux-Bodger draft, right?
It is. And also,
son of a...
It's probably the first tank in NHL history.
Damn.
At that point, Gretzky's already so great that they're like, oh, Lemieux could be big Gretzky? Let's get in on that.
Yeah.
So what happens? They tank to get worse than New Jersey, who they're in a division with. The NHL starts to put an eye on that, like, oh, we don't like that, but no lottery is instituted until after Gary Bettman comes, right around Gary Bettman comes in, because Ottawa tanks. In the year I mentioned earlier, 92-93, they wanted to be as bad as San Jose so they could get the first pick and get Alexander Dagg. Sometimes, wow. You know, it doesn't pay.
Wow. Clearly not.
Yeah.
Potentially what the Sabres might be looking at this year, because nobody knows how this draft is about to be.
Well, at least they're not tanking. 1980-81, this team went 9-57-14, 32 points and a negative 154 goal differential.
Wow. How many points did you say?
32 points. They had 14 ties. They had more ties.
I was going to say, how did they have more points than whoever had the 11-win season or the 9-win season or whatever?
Yeah, 14 ties.
All right, you said this was in
80-81. So think about what's happening around that time.
80-81.
Yes.
Are you alluding to, like, the Olympics?
No.
Okay. Are you alluding to, is it Edmonton?
No. No, that's, you're on the right track, though, with that, because it's Winnipeg. It's one of the other WHA teams.
Okay.
So it's a merger. I don't know exactly what happened with them.
What was Gretzky's draft year?
He didn't get drafted.
Or what? When did he come? Oh, yeah, you're right. Son of
Gretzky was really good by 81.
Yeah.
I think this is his first MVP year. But, you know, Winnipeg, on the bright side, things don't really get better.
The great thing about these quizzes is that both me and the listeners can learn things together, because I clearly just...
All right, you're going to nail this one.
Oh, boy.
74-75. This team went 867-5.
Oh, my God.
Hold on. 21 points and a negative 265 goal differential.
This is... That has to be the worst record, right?
It is. And they... maybe this will get it for you. They didn't win a road game until the very end of the year.
74-75?
Yeah.
This, I feel like I should know, being this bad, because I remember from, like, the Sabres being like, oh, I don't want to be as bad as... Oh, man. Do you have anything else you can give me?
Well, maybe this anecdote will help. When they won their... So they won, I think, 1-39 on the road that season. And they, when they finally won the road game, which is in the last few weeks of the season, they all passed, like, the garbage can in the locker room around like it was the Stanley Cup.
That's pretty funny. Dude, I honestly...
So you hadn't heard the anecdote before. So
I guess not. Yeah, no, not helpful.
This is their first year of existence, if that helps. Non-traditional market.
Yeah. I was going to... That does help, because I was about to guess Vancouver, but they came in with the Sabres, so that's not, it's not them. And if they would have came in 74-75, how about Calgary?
No, this is a year around the time the Atlanta Flames came in. But
Jesus,
it's not. It's the Washington Capitals, worst team ever. So. Real quick off that, you have 1, 2, 3, 3.5, 4.5, 5. So you have 5 of 13.
I'll take that.
But I have a bonus. If you get this, you get all your wrong ones right.
Really?
That's if you get this one, no year, but
this is a great deal.
I only had the year here. I don't know why there's no year here. I forgot to write it down. I guess I'm the one.
Is that a clue in and of itself?
No, it's still post expansion. Let me get the year exactly. I'll give you this though. They're 12-56-12, 36 points negative, 161 goal differential. So, but I'm going right now to look for the exact
year. Yeah, I was going to say it doesn't.
The stakes are huge here. You get a perfect quiz on this very hard quiz. You get this right. One guess, though. No,
I need the year. The year.
Absolutely.
Guess this record of this team. You don't get the year or anything else. You just get to guess based off of a record. Oh, man. Oh,
man. Okay, well. What is... You know what? Hockey Reference is really, really boning me right now. Yeah, this is goddamn. Okay. I have to look for an alternate route. Just so you know, hockeyreference.com. Not helping me at all right now.
Hockey Reference is like a very dated website.
Not good for the mobile device.
From like a navigation perspective, it's dated. It just doesn't, and like the look and feel of it to me is a little bit, I mean, it works, but clearly not for mobile.
Okay. So looking right now.
Give me something, Taylor. Here's an idea. What if you tell me what city they're based in, and then I'll guess the team?
No. Uh, 75-76 this is.
Oh, God, Taylor.
Well, this is why it's not going to be easy to get all your juju back.
75-76.
Yep. I don't know if this helps, but they're in the Smythe division.
The New Jersey Devils.
Wow. No. Ugh. But man, what a good guess.
That's rude.
It's their predecessor, the Kansas City Scouts.
So I kind of got that right then.
Yeah. Well,
you know. I get half of the rest of the answers right then.
Sure. Yeah. I'll put that on your permanent record.
Good. Thank you. Kansas City Scouts.
Kansas City Scouts only existed for 2 years, ran into financial trouble, became the Colorado Rockies, and then moved to New Jersey.
Yeah. Yep.
Probably got to be the shortest amount of time a franchise has moved twice.
I would think. My God. Yeah, that's like
cool nothing. Jerseys, though.
I would agree. I would definitely agree. Yeah. Well, any last thoughts to share before we get into our picks?
Oh, yes. Actually, we talked about this via text message. But at some point in the next month or so, Brandon and I have decided to do a fast food chicken sandwich ranking.
Oh, yeah.
Sure to be controversial.
I'm excited for that. That's going to be great.
We have a bunch of the main ones on our mind, like the big ones. So McDonald's has new ones, obviously.
Popeyes,
probably Chick-fil-A.
Wendy's,
not Burger King.
Why not? Burger King has a decent chicken sandwich.
Their crispy chicken's okay. But
I'm saying their spicy chicken sandwich. It's up there, dude. It's pretty good.
Maybe I'll give that a shot. We'll see.
You should.
You know, I have some coupons.
You know what we should do?
You know what's bad, though? What? The original chicken sandwich.
From Burger King? Like it's horrible. I hate that.
I love Burger King.
Yeah,
I know what you're talking
about. Yeah, that one's pretty good. What my idea is, though, that I was thinking could be good so that we don't gain like 400 pounds in one episode. What if we got one sandwich from each? Cut her in half, and then that way, you know,
we do it all at once.
I think we should. I think it'd be awesome.
All right, let's do it.
I think that would be really fun.
Yeah. So okay, here's what we do then. We'll let anyone who wants to get at us on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram, let us know if we're missing a place you think you would like.
Yeah.
All right. And nowhere.
Hell, do it with us too. If people want to do the thing with us, we'll publish the list of names of places that we're gonna do, and then if you want to take part in it with us, we'll let you know.
Yeah, we're open to adding like one spot, right? Because otherwise, it should be too many sandwiches.
And there's no such thing as too many sandwiches. But yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So don't tell us somewhere out in like North Tonawanda. I'm not going there. I'm not going to like Eden.
Pot shot at NT.
I'm just not driving. NT's not actually that far. That's a bad example. I'm not going to Lockport. I'm not going to Eden. I'm not going anywhere far away. We live in, Brennan lives in the Elmwood Village, and I live in North Buffalo.
And we're only doing like chain places, right? Because there's some great local. We should do a chain one, but then like way in the future, we should follow up and do a local chicken sandwich one.
I agree.
That'd be
fun. So we'll do... Think somewhere that at least has to be kind of a chain, you know?
Yeah.
It has to be chicken sandwich. And if we're missing one, just let us know. We might not add one if we're not missing one.
Yeah.
Obviously, we'd love to have Zaxby's involved. I love Zaxby's, but
I don't think I've ever had it.
Yeah, no, it's mostly in the Southeast and in Texas. So.
Oh, okay. That would explain why then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Remember the Zaxby's Heart of Dallas Bowl?
I literally don't know.
No.
I know
that was
nothing.
Always like a good like December 22nd bowl.
Yeah, nope, no idea, no clue. What's your pick for the week?
My pick for the week is Loyola of Chicago.
Wow, so, nice. Fun fact, I was going to go to college there.
That's
originally.
Right, Brendan got denied. It's very sad.
I did not, actually. I super didn't. I did get in. I just went to Fredonia because 45 minutes away and a hell of a lot cheaper.
Fredonia, magical place.
See, you know, I have two older sisters. Both of them went to private colleges. One of them actually went to this little school. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It's called St. Bonaventure.
That's right.
But after hearing about what a horrible experience she had there, I decided, you know what, I'm just gonna go to Fredonia, where the real cool kids go. Just kidding. She loves St. Bonaventure.
Fredonia,
like everybody else who goes to St. Bonaventure. They just love it more than anything.
Look, remember, if you're ever mad at me online about anything, be it my tweets, my bad takes, my podcast, my alma mater, my general hygiene, whatever it is.
What?
It is, and don't forget this, it's against the law to be mean to me, so don't do it.
Wow, really? Just because you went to Bounties?
Yeah, I know.
That's unbelievable. That's
it is.
Crazy law.
Yeah.
Wow.
Anyway, you know, shout out Fredonia is really cool. How many times did I visit Fredonia?
A lot.
Like 20?
A lot.
The last person I ever visited was you.
Yeah. We had some times.
We did.
We had some times.
Oh, hell yeah.
What place it was. Oh, quite a place. Yeah. Quite a good time. A good time.
So I never have anything bad to say about Fredonia.
Oh, that's so nice. I wish I could say the same about your school.
I just told you.
I'm just kidding. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, solidarity.
Sorry. You know, sorry. FBI listening in my phone right now. I'm sorry. Yeah. I didn't mean it.
Solidarity with our fellow Southern Tier dirtbags over there. That's all of us. We're all in this together.
What county are you in? As Bonnie's in there. Are you guys in Cattaraugus?
Yes.
And you where's Chautauqua? Yeah. Interesting. Fun stuff. All right. Cool. I guess.
I love counties, man. Yeah.
Counties rule. Counties rule.
I'm a big Allegheny head.
Bro, I love Wyoming County.
Oh, my God. Dude, you know I'm all
have you ever been there this life. Time of year? Oh, broom? Dude.
My girlfriend's from Wyoming County.
No way. Really?
Yeah.
Nice. Don't even get me started on Monroe.
Oh, get it out of here.
None. We don't need it.
No.
We don't need it.
I say just fold it in with all the other, whatever neighboring counties Monroe is.
Oh, boy. All right. Who's your random Sabres player?
I was thinking about our podcast you should go back and listen to that we had.
Oh, we should talk about that, actually, really quick. Go listen to our last episode. Doug Bodger's awesome.
Yes.
That guy rules.
He's my former Sabres player of the week. He was a really good interview again. If you haven't listened, like I said, great go back and listen.
Interview.
All kinds of crazy stories, and he's a very nice guy. So what else do you need to know?
Yeah. Wait, did you pick him? Doug Bodger?
Yeah, he's my guy.
Oh, okay. All right. I'll go with Dixon Ward.
Okay. Dixon Ward, part of the Stanley Cup team.
I think.
Yeah. All right.
Look, there you go. All right, everybody. Well, this has been another episode of Straight Up Sabres presented by the Hockey Podcast Network and Buffalo Fanatics. Make sure you're checking out the Hockey Podcast Network online at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com and wherever you listen to podcasts, 31 teams, 31 shows, plus a bunch of other great ones as well, covering everything that you need to know that is going on within the world of hockey right now. So make sure you are checking out Hockey Podcast Network online and you are following them on social media. And make sure you're also following us on social media as well. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and make sure you subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts, be it Spotify, iTunes, or Apple Podcasts, whatever the hell it's called, Google Play, the list goes on and on. Just make sure you're following along with us. We really appreciate the support so far this year, and we want to keep her going strong, even though the team is god-awful. So with that being said, everybody, thank you all so much for tuning in. We'll talk to you all on Monday. This has been Straight Up Sabres.